from yesterday. So what did we discover yesterday? Well, okay, so yesterday we looked at two experiments, single slit, double slit, and we noticed there were some peculiar properties of the behavior of small particles when they go through this single slit and double slit. Okay, and what we noticed is that this law, F equals ma, which is great, fantastic for describing the motion of baseballs, for cars, all that kind of stuff, for large objects, objects that are you know, of a size comparable to us. Okay, works great. But when trying to describe the behavior of these small particles, how they move through this apparatus, seems to not quite work. There's a certain sense in which it does work, which is fairly advanced, which we're not going to get into. But it doesn't seem to be obviously useful to us anymore. Okay. But what does seem to emerge from our analysis of the single and double slit is this relationship. We notice that lambda is h over p, or p is h over lambda, or just another way of writing it is just lambda times p is equal to h. This is the de Broglie relation. Okay, so what we found is that there seems to be some relationship between wave and particle properties. Okay, so we're starting with particles in the apparatus, which have some momentum p, but somehow, in some way, associated with that particle is a wave. The wave doesn't tell us how the particle behaves. The wave tells us something about the probability of the particle hitting the screen at various locations. Okay, so we start with a particle, and then we introduce a wave, and that wave allows us to calculate the probability pattern on the screen of those particles. Okay, so somehow the waves are associated with describing the behavior of those electrons. Okay, and there's this important relationship between that wave and the particles that we're dealing with. Okay, and the idea was, well, okay, instead of using this, let's try to use this to learn something about the nature or the behavior of electrons or small particles in some particular situation. Okay, and the situation that we looked at was a very important situation, and that was the particle in a box. Okay, so along the x-axis here, the ends of the box are at 0 and L, and what we did is we stuck a particle in there, and the only thing we said about the particle is it has a mass m, and it has some total energy E, and that energy is just kinetic. Okay. So we've given that particle some energy E, and we're trying to understand, well, what's it doing in the box? Okay. When we have this idea of a wave to contend with. Okay. And what we discovered is a whole bunch of interesting things. Okay. And I'm going to just sort of recap what it is we discovered, starting from the last thing and then working backwards. So at the end of the day, what we found is, if we look at the energy of the particle in that box, it turns out that it can't just have any energy. Okay, it can have only certain discrete allowed values of energy. Okay, so in particular, if this is no energy, the first allowed energy is above zero. This was what we called E0. And this is called zero-point energy. Okay, so even if we have a particle in a box, if we try to remove energy from it, we can remove energy, remove energy, remove energy, but we can never bring it to zero. Okay? It always has some, it's always doing something in that box, which has some kind of energy associated with it. And that turns out to be an extremely important property of our actual universe. Okay? And we will talk about that. As I mentioned last time, I just alluded to it, it explains how this table can exist. Okay? And we will see exactly how shortly. Probably tomorrow. Okay, so, and then the next allowed energy we called E1, which turned out to be just 4 times E0. So E0 is maybe down there. So 1, 2, 3, 4. And then the next one was E2, which was 9 times E0, and so on. It's actually squared. 2 squared is 4, 3 squared is 9, 4 squared is 16, and so on. Okay, so those were the allowed energy levels. And so that means that if it's in, say, this energy level here, if we tried to give it, say, this amount of energy, it simply wouldn't accept it. Okay? The only energy it would accept is this amount of energy, in which case it would jump to that, or this amount of energy, in which case it would jump to that, and so on. Okay, so certain discrete allowed energy level, that's quantization of energy. Okay? And then associated with each of these energies, the particle is in one of these energy states. Okay? It's associated with, there's a kind of a wave associated with it. Okay? And the wave function, the function which describes that wave, it's a standing wave. Okay? So that wave, when the particle has this much energy, the wave associated with it looks like this. It looks like a standing wave between the ends of the box, which oscillates up and down like that, with a node there and a node there. Okay? And the associated, and so what does this thing mean? Well, that's just the amplitude of the wave, okay? But what we're interested in is the square of the amplitude, because remember that what we're doing is we're associating, when we look at that double slit again, we have waves coming in like this, and we get this interference pattern here. If we take the amplitude of that wave and square it, that reproduces the particle probability pattern exactly. Okay, and so what we're interested in terms of the particles is the square of this wave. So if we take this thing squared, what we get is something that looks like that. Okay, and so what that's saying, this is a probability here. It's saying that if we look in the box, if the particle has this much energy, if we look in the box, we can't know in advance where the particle is going to be, where we're going to find it. Most likely we'll find it somewhere near the middle of the box, and very unlikely we'll find it near the ends of the box. Okay, so that's what that's saying. Okay, if the particle is in this state, so I'm using the word state, that's actually the word that's used in quantum theory, is the particle is in this state, because I don't really know how else to describe it. It's doing something, but that something is not anything like what we could imagine classically. It's not anything like the particle just bouncing back and forth like this. It's doing something really weird, and we're going to talk more about what it's doing. So it's in some kind of state, okay? And when it's in this state with energy E1, then the wave that's associated with it is, again, a standing wave, but now it has a node in the middle. Okay? And so instead of just one lump, it's got two lumps, okay? And this is going down, this is going up. Okay, and so it's going like this. That's our standing wave. But associated with that standing wave is a probability pattern. And what we do is we just take that wave and we square it. And so the probability pattern now looks like this. If we square a positive, we get a positive. If we square a negative, we get a positive. So we get two lumps. So it's saying if we look in that box, it's most likely to be found either here or here, but not very likely to be found here, here, or here, near the ends of the box or near the middle. Okay, so that's the interpretation. And finally, if we're, say, in this state, higher energy state, then the wave associated with it is again a standing wave, but now we have two nodes in the middle. And so the wave looks like that. Okay, it's a standing wave, like that, so just oscillating up and down like that. And the probability pattern associated with that, we square that, and now we just get three positive lumps. Okay, so if we look in the box, it's likely to be found in these locations, but not here, 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 or here. Okay, so that's that. So that's where we had gotten to last time, and let me just sort of emphasize a point here. In the classical or non-quantum picture, in the Newtonian universe, if the particle has some energy E inside that box, what's happening is, there's our particle. What it's doing is it is just bouncing off the walls back and forth like this. And so its momentum is either plus P or minus P. Okay? At one instant of time, it's going to the right. Momentum is plus P. At the next instant, it's going to the left after it's reflected off the wall. And this momentum P is related to the energy by just E equals P squared over 2m. So I can calculate P knowing the energy. Okay? In the quantum world, things are very different. In the quantum world, what we have is we don't have a definite trajectory. Okay, we can't follow the particle along and say, oh yes, it's bouncing back and forth like this. The only thing that we have is this probability pattern. So if we have particles here that are coming flying out like this into this double slit apparatus or through this double slit apparatus, you know, the first particle might hit there, the second particle might hit there, and so on. It's totally random where it hits. Okay? And if we allow that pattern to build up with flying a whole bunch of particles through there, we will get this pattern. Okay, but we can't actually follow the trajectory of any one of these particles and like we can there, follow the trajectory just oscillating back and forth. We don't actually know exactly what it's doing and getting from there to there. Okay, all that we can talk about are probabilities that when we look, we will find it there or there or there and there. Okay, we talk only about probabilities. And so maybe if it's in, say, this state over here, the probability pattern looks like that. Okay, and it's just saying if we look in the box, it's likely we'll find it there or there or there, but not likely here. So we've given up some kind of definite trajectory following its motion through space, and we have to accept the fact that there's all we can do is ask about probabilities of finding certain things to be true or not. Yeah.
Why can't we just make the box
small? We can make the box as small as we like. Yep, and we will talk about that exactly. The point is that if we start with a large box, the zero point energy. Do I have the formula for zero point energy? Does anyone remember what it is?
A squared over
L squared, right? So, m is the mass of the box. M is the mass of the particle. H is Planck's constant, so let's just take those as two given numbers. What we have that is adjustable is the size of the box L. So as we make the box smaller, this zero point energy gets bigger. Okay, so if we start with a big box, a wide box like this, the zero point energy is small. Okay, it's jiggling around in there doing some weird quantum thing, but it doesn't have very much energy. As we make that box smaller, say now this big, okay, we can make it as small as we like, the zero point energy gets more vigorous. Particles are claustrophobic. They don't like to be closed in like this, and they freak out. That's one of the questions on one of the exercises. How do you get from this state over here to this state? You squeeze the box smaller. In the process of squeezing the box, the energy goes up. But why? And you're going to think about that this afternoon. OK, excellent question. OK, so. In the quantum world, what we're doing is we're giving up this certainty, this definite trajectory of this thing just going doom, 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 doom. And we're just saying probabilities. At any time when I look in the box, I'll find the electrons there, whenever they're in there, there or there. The important point here is that in the quantum world, we are replacing plus P or minus P with plus P and minus P. This is one of the simplest ways to characterize the difference between classical and quantum world. Okay? So why am I putting an and here? Well, remember that essentially what happened yesterday, what we said is that the energy E is P squared over this. So we solve P is plus or minus square root of 2ME. Okay? We have a magnitude of momentum that's associated with some wavelength. Plus and minus tell us we've got a wave moving to the right. And then it bounces off the wall, means we've automatically got a wave moving to the left. Okay, and so simultaneously in the box, we have to have a wave moving to the right and moving to the left. Okay, and so in terms of a wave moving to the right plus a wave moving to the left just gives us our standing wave, which is this guy over here. Classically, that corresponds to a particle moving to the right and moving to the left at the same time. Okay, so that's a very, very important point. So basically, in order to have a standing wave, like we've got waves like this in the box, and that wave moves to the right, bounces off here and comes back, unless what we require is that that wave have a certain wavelength so that the wave moving to the right and the wave moving to the left interfere constructively. Okay? They're self-reinforcing upon multiple reflections. Okay? And that requires that both waves be present, a wave moving to the right and wave moving to the left at the same time. Okay, so. So introducing the very idea of a wave into our picture forces us to consider both that both possibilities are present simultaneously. right and left moving. And we will see a lot of this as we go along. Okay, so this is decidedly odd. And this is exactly where quantum mechanics is odd. Okay, that oddness shows up in all kinds of different ways, but there's one place. Okay, so that's that. Let's talk about something called the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. How many of you have not heard of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle? Okay, so a few of you. Okay, so let's talk about that. That's a very important idea. And what it's going to give us is yet another way of understanding this weirdness. That and there is really weird. We're going to find another way of understanding the weirdness of quantum mechanics.